For it's one, two, three strikes, you're out at the old ball game. Take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever get back. Let me root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. For it's one, two, three strikes, you're out at the old ball game.
Welcome to Let's Get Two, the baseball podcast from the fans' perspective. Now here's your host, James Christopher.
And welcome to Let's Get To. I am your host, James Christopher, and we've got a full episode for you. We're going to be visiting with Randy Wilkins. Randy's a documentary filmmaker. He's a big baseball fan, and we're going to talk a little bit about baseball's public relations disaster. They're negotiating through the media in the backdrop of the reaction to the murder of George Floyd. We're also going to be visiting with Scott McIntyre and Andy Tom Chesson. We're going to do one more group session as we try to interpret and try to examine the most recent proposal from either the players or from the owners. I'll be honest, by the time I actually talk to those guys, which is after I record this, I'm not going to be sure who's talking to whom, which is part of the problem. But you're probably thinking, you look like you're in a pretty good mood, and the show had been a little bit of a downer last week, and that is because I am going to see baseball. Fans of the show know that I had a pretty extensive travel plan set out that I was supposed to start in April that was going to take me all over the country to both coasts and in the middle, and of course, coronavirus happened. But I have bought plane tickets. I will be spending the 3rd and 4th of July, including Star Wars night, at the Colonel League. That's right. The Colonel League in Normal, Illinois is happening. There are going to be 4 collegiate summer league teams. And then I'm going to be going up to North Dakota to watch Bismarck. And then I'm going to be going to Macon to see the Macon Bacon. And there are more leagues propping up. I'll probably get to some more games when I go up to Minnesota to see the St. Paul Saints. So even though it seems like there's so much strife going on and so much really anxious, high tense moments all happening at one time, I'm going to relish in the fact that I actually get to see some baseball.
Oppo Taco, a fan's view of the show.
So we're excited to welcome to the Oppo Taco segment of Let's Get To. We've got 3-time Emmy Award-winning director and huge baseball fan Randy Wilkins to the show. You can see his latest work, the Deer Spike episode on the Deer Show for Apple TV. Randy, how's it going, man?
Going pretty well, considering everything going on in the world right now. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's so weird because I could definitely have you on my movie show if we weren't on hiatus right now and just nothing but talk, getting to hang out with Spike Lee, but we'll get there in a second. But I'd like to give a little background. You know, you're a big baseball guy, and I feel like I don't find a lot of people in our industry that actually like baseball anymore. Maybe that's just a microcosm of America. But how long have you been into baseball, and what team did you like growing up?
Well, I've been into baseball since as long as I can remember. I used to watch games as a baby with my late grandfather, Charles McGowan. My mom would turn on baseball games and sit me in front of the TV so she could get a moment by herself. So baseball has been a part of my life since even before I could remember specific moments. And I'm born and raised in the Bronx, so naturally I'm with the New York Yankees. So,
man, I was supposed to be at my – before we get into this, let's talk a little bit about me for a second. Last weekend, I was supposed to be Astros at Mets, Somerset Patriots, New York Yankees, Wilmington Blue Rocks, and then Astros at Orioles 5 days.
Yeah. Oh, man. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's oh, been man, like, that sucks. Yeah, it's like the second year of our show, and I had so many things planned. Now I'm going to go to North Dakota and watch some collegiate summer league because I got to have it. So, you know, we're recording this the night before it drops, which means everything can change.
But just in a macro, where do you think we are as far as with baseball getting a season?
Okay, so if you had asked me this yesterday, I probably would have been pretty down on the idea of having baseball. I think after reading some things today and Ken Rosenthal's tweets and his article that came out in The Athletic today, I'm pretty confident that they are going to play. I think, well, I know that the biggest issue so far has been settling on a certain amount of games, that even the prorated thing and the payments and all the financial stuff can work itself out, but it really comes down to the number of games. And it feels like the players' union and the league are slowly starting to come to the middle in terms of settling on a number of games that both sides can be comfortable with. So as of today, on Wednesday, whatever today's date is,
right?
I think we are going to get baseball. I guess the question now is it going to be something that's representative of a real season and, you know, something that would make the eventual champion a deserving one?
I guess that's my next question then. So you're a Yankee fan. I'm an Astros guy. I feel bad kind of for Dodger fan because they get Mookie and a steal and now that.
Right.
How many games does it matter? Like if the Yankees win a 50-game season with an expanded playoff, I mean, it should count, right? I know that I don't like to talk about asterisks in World Series. It's a little personal.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think 50 games is enough. I think we're actually past the point where I would feel comfortable with a certain amount of games in a shortened schedule to like really, really feel good about a championship. I think we're slowly getting into the territory where a lot of the fluke nature of baseball can really impact how the playoffs play out, who's in the field, what happens in those playoff series. So I think, I don't know, we're getting past the point of no return for me personally in terms of what I consider a legitimate champion. So 50 games definitely isn't enough for me. Even if the Yankees won, I would take it, but I would definitely look at it through a different lens than the other ones.
Yeah, I think I tend to agree. And I think, and this kind of gets to like the crux of the conversation. So I'm going to guess that I'm a lot older than you are. And
well, I look younger than
I'm 44.
So I'm 40.
Okay, great. So we are roughly the same age. Yeah. It's weird to listen to like it was in 1994. Hey, we're not making enough money from the owners. Players are saying, tell me how much you're not making. And then the owners won't answer. The difference is they're doing it in the background. And I was going to start like chronologically, but I want to talk about what I think is the most serious part of it. How do you feel like this negotiating through the press has looked in the backdrop of America's response to the murder of George Floyd? Because it's not a great look, man.
It's a horrible look. I think it's a totally misread of the room. And I think it's insensitive, to be quite honest. I think it's embarrassing, and I think that it's troubling. I think the leaks within themselves are a bad look, but to have it in a much larger national context, I think it's terrible. And quite frankly, I think it's unacceptable. If you're not going to put out a statement for 9 days, at least have the negotiations for a start of a season. Let those things happen behind closed doors. I mean, it's insensitive to me, to be quite honest. And I definitely had an issue with it. And it kind of belies the statement that they put out a couple of days ago, as far as I'm concerned. So, I mean, yeah, I don't think it's good in any form or fashion.
And to me, it's like Major League Baseball has done their best to take their incompetence to 11, right? Like,
yeah.
It's one thing to discuss, and look, I am almost 9 times out of 10 a pro-union, pro-player guy. But on one hand, to take the look of people losing jobs, people are getting furloughed, and you could, for the betterment of the country for 2 months, play the game. And that's just during COVID. Now we've got to factor in that the country is having a real gut check moment as far as what direction we want to go. We want to go one way as a people. Our president wants to go a different way. We'll talk about that in a second. So yeah, I mean, paint that picture for me. Like as someone who, you know, like you're a filmmaker, so you obviously have like a point of view how is it that they're just continuously getting this wrong?
I don't think it's of interest for the owners. I mean, I think it's as simple as that. The fact that they can't come to an agreement and seem like the obstacle for a start to the season just tells me a lot about what their interests are and what their focus is really on. I mean, I really do blame. I'm also a pro-labor, pro-player guy. But especially in this instance, it's clear to me that the owners are the roadblock. And I think they're really only in it to gain as much profit as possible. I mean, you bring up COVID, and I don't remember where I saw this, but there's a number floating out there that's a lot of these billionaires who own these big companies have profited in the billions during a pandemic. So I think that these owners are no different than, you know, big time businessmen. I mean, that's who they are. And I think that they look at all of these as revenue sharing entities, or I'm sorry, revenue generating entities. And, you know, that's what's important to them. And that's what their focus is. And everything else comes second, third, and fourth compared to that ultimate goal. So I think it's as simple as that. I know sometimes we like to make it more complicated than sometimes things need to be, but they've shown throughout this entire pandemic what's important to them. And I just think that the national context of protest and civil unrest and fighting for equal rights and fighting against things like police brutality are things that are not on their radar. They're not impacted by it. I mean, they live in a world of privilege. So really, why would they, you know, it doesn't impact them. Why do they care?
How much do you think, so you've seen players, whenever the protests, whenever the murder happened, actually, players immediately started coming out and discussing where we need to go as a country way before the league did, way before the owners did. How much of this do you think is going to have an effect on any negotiation either now or after the CBA, when it just, like, at the most, even the most sort of neutral level, it shows how out of touch the owners are, or don't care about the actual workforce that works for them?
Well, I think one smart thing they did, meaning the players union, in the latest proposal that they sent to the league, is include a fund for social justice and for minor leaguers. So I think that it's a genuine act of action on the part of the players, but I also think it puts the owners in a position to, you know, put your money where your mouth is. And, you know, are you going to contribute to efforts to improve social justice, or are you just going to stand on the sideline? Like, this is a concrete item for you to agree to. And I mean, I think that we're going to see more of that. It might not necessarily be something that's instituted officially through a CBA, but my hope is that this starts chipping away at the systemic racism and this culture that's within Major League Baseball of silencing people who have particular viewpoints and perspectives that really need to be shared with all of us. And I think that hopefully this moment starts to chip away at the idea of, you know, playing the game the right way and always relying on baseball's traditions and kind of relying on the good old days. And it starts to move away from that, because I think that's also part of the problem, that mentality and that culture of always relying on the days of yesteryear and all the things that come along with that. I think it's stifling. So I think it needs to happen in both institutional manners, but also just social interactions and social contexts as well.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I wanted to – baseball does that all the time, right? Like, they run to the past, even though I think we both love the game, but the past of Major League Baseball at many, many levels has always been about – racism, and it's always been about the workers are essentially way lower class citizens in the ownership. It's always been about cheating. Sorry, we didn't invent it.
Right.
Why is it that we can't, every other sport figured out a way to move forward with the way that they share revenue, the way they operate, but baseball is still stuck in the past. And as it stays stuck in the past, it's fated to, and many might argue, the fourth or fifth most popular sport in the country. Like, why is it that baseball just can't get it together?
I think because it's the longest standing professional sports league, and they actually have a grand history to always return to. I mean, Babe Ruth was 19, 18 to the end of the 1920s, you know, as a Yankee at least. So there's a very rich history and a transformative history alongside the history of the country and the growth of the country in the 20th century. Those two things are interwoven together. And this idea of passing baseball down from father to son and all of these tropes really have just become a part of the identity of the sport. You know, that's it chose to go in that direction. And also, I think because the sport is regionalized, it approaches the marketing of the game in a completely different manner. So if it's, you know, I don't really, we'll just use this as an example. I know Alex Bregman is a great player outside of, you know, like the controversy that we won't get into, but I know that he's a great player, but there's nothing enticing me to be a fan of Alex Bregman, right? Because I'm a Yankee fan and you're an Astros fan, but I don't necessarily see Alex Bregman every Thursday or Tuesday or Sunday night. As in with basketball, I see LeBron James pretty much every other day. I don't need to be a Lakers fan to be a LeBron James fan to follow what he's doing. It's a little bit easier for the NBA to market a star because they transcend region. It's a national sport in the sense that that's how they frame themselves. That's how they present themselves. In baseball, there's an allegiance to the team, not necessarily the player. There's an allegiance to the uniform, like in the case of the Yankees. So when you do things like that and you frame it in that manner, you're connected automatically to the history of that franchise rather than the people that play in those uniforms. So I think that just continues and then it just reinforces itself and you never break that cycle.
I, for one, though, I'm a big Aaron Judge fan. I think he's one of the nicest guys in baseball.
Yeah, like he's awesome.
Yeah, he did a thing. I was at a ball game and Orbit put him on trial. Like he came out dressed like Aaron Judge and he played along. It was great. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, he's awesome.
But I digress. But I do think you're right. I think, like, you know, they talked about the ratings of the last World Series. If ESPN and MLB had made a point of introducing all of us to the Nationals when they were making that run, you might not have had those low ratings. Like it.
Right.
And I get it. Like you and I are both in that business where, yeah, we have to get the ratings now. We can't invest in the future. But I do think it's problematic. I do want to go back to the reaction to George Floyd's murder. So you talked about it took, 9 days for MLB to make a statement. Mm-hmm. Now it seems like every team is tripping over themselves to make a statement. The Astros, now I don't know if it was because he's from Houston, but the Astros put his picture up on the scoreboard and did an Instagram picture. Mm-hmm. Does that ring hollow to you now? Or is it just, is it kind of like, or at least it's happening? Like, how does that feel?
I don't think it's hollow. I mean, it's important for people to feel like they're respected and seen. I mean, there are a lot of Black fans of baseball and a lot of Latino fans of baseball. I think it's important for us to be seen and recognized. Now, do I think that it moves the needle? No, but I think that in some cases, symbolic gestures do have value, and within those gestures, it recognizes that I like baseball, that I'm a person, that, you know, that I'm a part of this in some small way. So I think it's important. The timing of it could have been better, obviously. I don't think that it's anything groundbreaking, but there, to me, for situations like this, it is important for it to be recognized and acknowledged. And now there's a public acknowledgement of it, which also means to me that now I can put pressure on you to actually like create some actionable items and follow through on those things. So I think it, if you handle it in a particular manner, you can use those statements as a way to hold these teams accountable.
So you don't feel like too little too late, like you're, no matter how long it took, they did something and that's what
matters. It's too late. I don't know if it's too little. Okay. Like in the case of the Yankees, they initially put out a Nelson Mandela quote that had nothing to do with anything. And they treated it with the graphics that they normally use to announce the starting lineup for that night's game.
And oh, wow.
That was, I had an issue with that. I know that the Yankees try their best to recognize things like this from time to time, at least, but that treatment wasn't good. They eventually put out a much stronger statement. I thought the statement was pretty good, given that they're like a huge brand. But the first, I guess, attempt at it was pretty weak. So I think it part of it is also how does each individual team address it and how did they frame it?
So I wanted to ask you then, because I know we had talked offline in our prep about, you know, we talked about baseball's reaction to it, which was poor, and the arguing that's going back and forth. We talked a little bit about our president's actions. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm trying to think. So, you know, I'm a veteran. I served for 7 years. I was in a combat zone for a year and a half of them. I've never had a president where, whether I voted for them or not, did I ever feel like, oh, at least that guy loves this country. He just has a different idea of what it is. Mm-hmm. When you hear about, just as someone who's from the Bronx, like when you hear, I'm going to use military troops to basically squash the First Amendment, what's the first thing that goes through your head as a filmmaker in particular?
Well, first, thank you for your service. I'm very thankful for it. Honestly, I've tuned him out. I mean, I have no reaction to anything that he says anymore. I mean, I know you probably have listeners that are supporters of his, and that's fine, but I've tuned him out. He's dangerous. He's made things like what happened with George Floyd more common, I believe. I think he's given the green light for people that want to take racial justice in their own hands. He's given them a green light to be violent. He's a horrible man, but like coming from New York, I knew about Trump before, you know, like true, before yeah. the rest of the country did. Like we knew that he was a crook. We knew that he was a failing businessman. Like we know his history. We know what he's about. We know that the only thing that saved him was, you know, branding his name on other people's property. You know, he wasn't a successful businessman, and we know that the history of racism that comes with him and his family. I mean, my grandmother lived for a short amount of time in Left Rack City in Queens, and I believe, don't quote me on it, but I believe Trump's family sold that land to another big real estate person. But there was a history of racism at the beginning for Left Rack City. There's a huge and long history of racism with Trump, and none of this surprises me. I mean, he's just not a good dude. I mean, he never has been. There isn't anything really redeeming about him as far as I'm concerned. So none of this surprises me at all.
I hope we don't have listeners that still believe in that dude. We might need to. I could use a few less. I do want to talk about your latest project, and it was cool because you know, again, we're both kids in the '90s, and you know, getting to work. First of all, you work with Spike Lee on that ESPN 30 for 30 short, and then getting to do the documentary. Just what was that experience like working with essentially, you know, a black filmmaking icon, an independent filmmaking icon? I mean, just how did you wrap your head around that experience?
I wrapped my head around it in a way that you wouldn't think. So he was actually my teacher at NYU.
Okay.
So I've known Spike since 2003. So he was my directing masterclass teacher in my third year at NYU grad film school. I worked under him. I was an assistant editor under him. I was an editor for him. So I have a long history with Spike. So for me, the experience of doing this show on Apple was different because I became the director and he had to kind of listen to what I had to say. And, you know, he was going along with my vision instead of the other way around. You know, I'm so used to executing his tremendous vision and, telling his stories, and now the tables had turned, and he was incredibly open with me. He was incredibly vulnerable with me. He I think he showed a side of himself that he doesn't normally show to the public. And I think my relationship with him was a benefit. So yeah, it was funny just because the roles have reversed for one moment in time. That's never going to happen again. So I cherished it and made sure to remind him that, you know, we were sitting in different seats, but it was incredible. And I really do think that the relationship I had with him allowed the interview and also the episode come out the way that it did, just because there was a familiarity and a trust. And I think he trusted me to put him in the best light possible.
You know, and before we wrap up, I want to talk about that vulnerability. So I don't want to spoil how it works, but I thought it was beautifully done. The blending of the reading of the letter from the person who sent it in Spike. Was there one moment that you can think of that you thought, wow, that really affected him? Because I thought the one about school days really, for me, was like, I can't imagine what it must have been like as a filmmaker to say, I want to set out a goal of an emotional response and then find out 30 years or later or whatever it was that he got that. So was there one moment for you that grabbed you?
Well, for me, it was Candace Wiggins and her story. Candace played in the WNBA and I knew of her. And I knew of her dad, but I didn't really know the full story. So I think that the shoot for her was really cathartic, and I think it forced her to confront some more things about her relationship with her father and the path that she chose to pursue a career in basketball. And she had a lot of emotional moments that weren't just on camera. Like the first night that I met her, we spoke for about an hour while she was doing some costume fittings. And I mean, I think it was hitting her that, you know, this was happening and that Spike was going to like be more aware of her story. And I think she thought about her dad a lot. And I think that the entire experience for her was very emotional. And I think we were able to capture some of that for the show. But that's definitely something that stayed with me. And we shot the interview with Spike the day before he won his Oscar. And we shot we shot all the letter writers a couple weeks later. So Spike read the letters, obviously, but didn't see any of the stuff that we had shot. So I'm not totally sure what his response was. I know in the moment, I think he was taken aback that President Brown had seen School Days 204 times. I think he kept going back to that, like, and he wasn't totally sure if he believed him or not. he was taken aback by that. And I also think that Candace's letter like really hit him, because she was pretty clear in saying that Spike kind of became like a father figure for her in a very interesting and indirect way. So I think that also like resonated with him as well.
Yeah, again, it was incredible. Part of me, when he said 240 something times, I put myself in Spike's mind going, why would anybody want to watch any of my movies more than that? But that's a whole thing. So what are we working on next? What's going on next?
Just developing a couple projects, developing a feature documentary, and also I have my feature script ready to go. I feel like people now wanting to hear more Black stories from Black creators, I think will open up the door for a script that I feel pretty confident in. We definitely hit some roadblocks, and to being completely honest, I think the fact that, you know, it primarily focuses on Black characters, I think that was an issue.
Yeah.
So I'm very curious to see what happens moving forward. But yeah, I mean, trying to make more projects, and I've been approached by some people at MLB about, you know, asking me my thoughts about stuff that I've talked about. So who knows if anything comes out of that. If not, it's cool that I was able to help facilitate a conversation. So hopefully just creating and, you know, making stuff. But I'm also shooting a short film. I had bought a Super 8 camera during the pandemic. Or the height of the pandemic. So I wanted to shoot a short film that addresses what's going on in the nation, but not just kind of recapping all the tragic police brutality videos. I wanted to do something else and a little bit more creative. So I'm working on that right now. So yeah, I'm excited for things that could happen in the future.
Well, Randy, we're really rooting for you. Thank you so much for being on Let's Get To and taking some time out. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Go Go Astros, a focus on H-Town Hardball. And now, the Big League Chew. And I on the majors.
And we're back here on group session time. We are back here with Go Go Astros host Andy Tomchesson, the Big League Chew host Scott McIntyre, who is representing lots of his teams, all of his teams.
It was 1 year ago today that the St. Louis Blues won their first Stanley Cup. So, yes, let's go Blues. And you know what? We may repeat this year. We've been Stanley Cup champions longer than anyone since, like, World War II. So,
it feels like it's been 1 year since anybody played any games.
It does.
You got to get up at 4:30 and watch the Doosan and NC. They had a great series this week. That's where it's gotten to.
Yeah. Go Bears. All right, we got a bunch to get to. As they say in the song Eastbound and Down, we got a long way to go and a short time to get there. Let's start with you, Andy. Commissioner Manfred guaranteed there would be baseball.
Guaranteed.
Guaranteed there would be.
100%.
100%. And he's – I guess we're now waiting for a response to the last players thing. He did not ruling out the 50-game thing. Just where are we on this?
Well, I mean, it's really interesting that we're waiting on a response since they said last week they weren't going to respond anymore. It's junior high at this point. We're not going to respond to you unless you respond to us first. Check yes or no if you want to play baseball this year.
The answer is maybe.
And frankly, I don't know if anybody's checked a box yet, and that's really the issue because we're sitting here – on June, what is this, the 11th? It's all one big day. The last week, anyway. We're sitting here on June 11th. There is no tangible progress other than they keep sliding a different set of numbers of games played. The owners still don't want to pay full salaries for the prorated games or prorated salaries for the full games played. The players still want at least half a season's worth of pay. There doesn't appear to be a lot of middle ground to be given, although the players feel like they've given more than the owners in the back and forth by allowing for deferral to next year if no fans are allowed, allowing some continuation if there's no playoffs to be held because of another spike of COVID. So we're sitting here, and, you know, for the people who don't care how the sausage is made, we pushed the recording of this back 3 hours because we hoped we were going to have something to talk about, and we're still just staring at each other and glancing at Twitter going, what the hell's going on? So that's the state of baseball, June 11th, 2020.
Right here. And baseball is doing nothing to really ingratiate itself. Scott, you know, do you feel like Manfred was an olive branch in the ESPN interview, or was he a my way or the highway is what's going to happen in the ESPN interview?
I feel like Manfred actually proved that he might have human capacity in the ESPN interview was kind of how I looked at it. So it really feels like all the events that led up to the Cuban Missile Crisis were because the two sides weren't communicating correctly. And then accidents were happening and accidental nuclear things were happening here and there. And this feels like that on a much lesser scale, obviously, because nuclear weapons aren't involved. But
yeah,
I think it comes down to controversies and impasses happen when two sides aren't adequately talking. And so Manfred is attempting to set himself up as the mediator, negotiator, while he's walking softly. It really felt like he was walking softly, but carrying a big stick. And so saying, hey, MLB guys, players, come on, 89 games is not reasonable at this point. You're not going to get 89 in. You got to come down. The owners have already offered 76. We can figure out the money part, but if you don't make me use this belt, but if you make me use this belt, I'm going to use it, and you're going to get your 50-game season, and you're going to get what you like out of it. So even as they're talking about money and everything, this is absolutely there cannot be fans this year is what I'm trying to say. There can't be fans because if they're negotiating this lesser range of salary and then suddenly things open up and the owners say, no, okay, yeah, we're going to let 25% of the fans in. Well, the players are going to go on strike because they didn't agree to that in the beginning. So because the income would be greater. So there's things like that have to be figured out. What happens if fans come back or just say no fans? You guys can get on Zoom calls and watch together for $20 or whatever StubHub charges.
Andy, I think that's a great point. Something I didn't think about. You know, we're watching all of these little pockets pop up. These little collegiate summer leagues and independent leagues are popping up because you can do things regionally. You're right, though, or Scott's right. In Texas, we could have up to 50% capacity. But I guess if they nail down this is what the salary is, you can't bring that X factor of tickets back in, can you?
Well, I mean, that's kind of the issue that the players have painted themselves into without wanting revenue sharing. And I get it. They shouldn't have that much at risk, they feel. I understand their point. Whether I agree with it or not, it's immaterial. But if you don't want to have anything at risk, you can't complain when the owners make more money because things went right. They're negotiating on the idea that things are going to go horribly, horribly wrong. And that's where they are. And you can't have it both ways unless they say, okay, great, we want revenue sharing, in which case the owners got what they wanted and we could have been playing by now.
Yeah.
Or at least it's sitting in spring training right now. By the way, the median between 76 games and 89 games, guess what it is?
82.
That's correct. Good job, Scott.
82 and a half. We're going to have one canceled midway through the fourth inning.
All right, everybody, go home. We're good.
I assume we'll get a rain out in Houston somehow in a dome stadium.
You know, in our previous segment, we had Randy Wilkins on, who is a really accomplished filmmaker. He did a documentary on Spike Lee, but is a really big baseball fan. He's been kind of one of these voices on Twitter. And, you know, he kind of looked at me dead in the eye and said, 50 games won't feel like baseball.
I think that's accurate. I think that's fair. And it ruins the specialness of the regular season. And I know every time you add a layer of playoffs, it takes away from the regular season. But I think you get to a point of the point of building a baseball team and having an organization and having talent that can come up and go down, and you build for the long haul over 162 games. In a 50-game season, literally anything could happen. And by anything, I mean the Seattle Mariners could make the playoffs. The Seattle Mariners, for if you look at every prognostication for the season prior to all this mess happening, we're going to be dead last in the division and probably the worst team, maybe with Baltimore in the American League. And the reason for that is because they don't have any talent. But in baseball, everybody wins 50 games. Everybody loses 50 games. It's what you do with the other 50, 62 games. If you cut it down to 50 games, there's a potential of a really bad team getting into the playoffs, and not only getting in the playoffs, but catching fire at the right time and winning. And that's just going to further the whole idea of the asterisk is going to go next to a potential winner of this postseason tournament. I don't know if we're going to call it playoffs or World Tournament of Baseball or Atari 2600 Back to the Future. I mean, I don't know what we're going to call it. I'm sure they're looking for sponsors right now.
I vote for Atari 2600. Scott, what's 50 games going to feel like to you if the Cardinals win the World – I mean, I'm still going to call it the World Series. Cardinals win the World Series. Would that be – was it 14 for that franchise or how many?
It feels like I'm going to a parade with a mask on. I mean, seriously, okay. You know, that's what it feels like. You know, I hear you guys, 50 games doesn't seem like a full season. But then again, collegiate teams play around 50 games, give or take, in a season, maybe a few more. And if you've played, you know, when I was younger and playing an American Legion schedule that was about 60, 65 games, that's still grueling. That there's
sure.
A lot of things that can happen.
And there'll be no off days. They will have doubleheaders, yeah.
Well, right. Don't get me
wrong. It's a 10K.
Scott,
it's a
10K
rather than marathon.
If the Astros end up winning the World Series this year, I'm going to buy the second ring and buy all the merchandise and celebrate it as their second franchise World Series victory. That's right. I said second, trash can lovers. Because
both of ours will have asterisks. Damn it.
I would love it if you guys won the World Series and on the ring, the diamonds were shaped in a trash can. That would just be gold, baby.
That'd be
gold. No, I think that there's still a lot to be said for 50 games. Andy is completely right. Somebody could catch fire, especially with these expanded rosters that we anticipate having. You know, there are guys at AAA that can rake. They just, you know, don't get in at the right time. Well, also for the National League teams, they may very well, if they do the pods like you're talking about, National League teams suddenly have a DH, right? Mm-hmm. So that's never happened before. For Cardinals fans, we're going to feel awful because we just traded away the perfect DH in Jose right. Martinez. Cafe Jr., enjoy Tampa. See you later. Shoot. But, you know, we'll find somebody like that. But National League teams are going to have expanded offense. It's going to change the way National League managers manage the game.
Or they don't anymore, right, Andy? They just put a lineup card, let the pitching coach make choices.
I mean, I feel the Astros steered into that curve when they hired Cecil Cooper as the manager before we even moved to the American League, because he would regularly put out wrong lineup cards and do nothing during the game.
Well, but that's – and it's especially if you factor in that you're going to have lefties that are no longer lefty specialists, right? So you've got DHs in the National League and guys that have to face a minimum of three batters. Times of games are going to go up by 10 to 20 minutes. That really is a
fascinating point that I wish we had a real baseball season or a regular baseball season to discuss. There's no need for a lefty specialist anymore.
No.
I mean, that's not a thing that you have to carry anymore.
You can see it in the draft. They're picking up guys that have dominant pitching that can get people out from either side of the plate.
Yep.
That lefty specialist thing is gone. They're not it's even
funny
talking
to me
about
that. That point's funny to me because one of the big hangups has been when they're beating up the Astros farm system is our lack of left-handing relief pitching. Who gives a crap anymore?
Doesn't matter.
No one.
Doesn't matter. As Billy Beane told Art Howe via Brad Pitt talking to Philip Seymour Thomas, I don't care about righty lefty.
I don't care, but I do. I don't care about righty lefty. okay, so we think there's going to be a season, and I think all of us can complain. Like, there is this part of me that if it doesn't can't – like, now I have so much baseball scheduled in my life as far as trips that yep. I'm like, well, I don't give a shit. I mean, I do, obviously.
Do you know what July 3rd is at Normal, Illinois, when you're there for the Corn Belt?
It's Star Wars night, baby. I do know.
Yes, you do.
I'm going to Normal, Illinois. I'm going to watch 4 games in 2 days because every single game's a doubleheader. Everyone. And
I'm gonna see you there.
Yeah, and then you and me, Andy, we're going to some Sugarland games, baby.
Sure.
We're going to go watch.
We'll watch whoever's playing.
The Sugarland Rockets, managed by Roger Clemens. Actually, that's
no, I'm not. I can't. I can't root for anybody run by a Clemens. I'm sorry.
He'll just be the one we want to. Although we'll root for him to be on the show. I'll ask about Mindy McCready.
That part is fine. I'll root for PD. I'll root for Inky's team.
Yeah, absolutely. As well, we should. I do want to talk a little bit about, you know, we're dealing with the shorter draft. And with the shorter draft, with the news that NCAA has granted the extra year for seniors and eligibility across all spring sports, including baseball, how is this going to affect next year's draft? Scott?
Me first. So, first of all, for the draft, number two, Heston Kerstad to the Baltimore Orioles.
Scott, you did not care about the – you're like everybody in America, Scott. Hey, first of all, breaking news, the Astros do not have a second-round pick either. I just want to make sure.
Hey, why don't they, Jim? Why don't they?
Because they're cheaters.
Okay. Guys, I wasn't sure because they only said that 10 times last night.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I only saw it 17 times on the ticker, so I'm glad you guys cleared that up. No, so the draft next year is going to be loaded. It's going to be stumbling out of the bar at 3 a.m. drunk loaded. There's going to be an influx of talent if you get back to a normal draft next year. If you get back to
they're not going beyond 10. They will not go beyond 10 next year.
You don't think so?
No, I know so. They are okay. They have agreed to a shorter draft for 2 seasons in a row, and I think that we all know that they're not going to go back.
Yeah,
this is what it's going to be. Because for as much as Mike Clevenger cares about the future of baseball, he only cares about it until it's time to sell the future of baseball actually down the river. Yeah, no, that was part of that March deal. So,
okay, well, so there you have it. So next year you're going to have an influx of talent. I don't think anybody there. You're going to find very few people that are not college seniors that sign as undrafted free agents this year, simply because $20,000 for a signing bonus isn't that great.
Right.
Next year there'll probably be a bigger pool. You'll see guys still sign if they're drafted. More than likely, everybody who would sign that gets drafted in the first 10 rounds would sign. I don't think you see the change. Where you really, really, really will see the change is when you get to the 2023 draft, because all of the guys coming out of high school who would have been drafted, who would have gone to the pros for a $100,000 signing bonus, are now going to college, and they got to spend 3 years there. So college baseball is going to get really good for the next 3 or 4 years because of how much talent's being pushed into it.
Especially since that high school talent all dropped in the draft this year because there was nothing to watch of them.
Right. Yeah, you didn't see a high school player drafted through the first 7 picks, and that hasn't happened in forever.
So Andy, is this the draft to only, like, if you're talking about only 5 drafts and everybody else is going to be an undrafted free agent, is this the year where the Astros are like, you know what, if we got to miss 2 picks, this is the year to do it?
Yeah, I mean, it benefits them. You and I exchanged messages last night. Only 13% of the drafted first rounders actually make the majors and have any kind of substantial career. So it's not like we're talking about a surefire thing like the NBA when you're a first round draft pick, or the NFL when you're a first round draft pick and you're going to be playing.
You better play in the first. Yeah.
With the MLB, you're going to maybe see this guy in 2 years. If everything goes right, more likely it's going to be 3. So if you don't have a first round or second round pick, but there's a whole lot of undrafted free agents, for lack of a better term, sitting out there that would have normally been your 6th round pick, your 7th round pick, your 8th round pick, absolutely this benefits a team that doesn't have a first or a second round pick. I mean, it would be nice to have a first round pick, and obviously we were being punished because ESPN told me last night, MLB told me last night, we lost our pick because big cheaters.
Yeah. Oh, you lost 2 picks. I don't know if you read that. You lost 2 picks.
The Athletic and Yahoo and Jessica told me too. I don't.
Did you know that we don't have a pick tonight?
So let me ask you guys a very honest question here. As a non-Houston Astros fan, obviously, sure, about the Cardinal stuff. When we do get back to playing baseball this year, is this not a benefit to the Astros? If there is a winner out of this, is it not? Is it the Astros that are the winners? Because on road trips, you're not going to get the.
I'll let Andy go first. I have my own take. I'll let Andy go first.
I'm just curious.
I think the whole fan booing nastiness is completely overblown because they'll lose interest after the first round of games. But it absolutely benefits Houston because we play in Texas. Our governor has already said we can have 50% of our stadium filled if we want to. You go to California, where we're going to be playing all of our games except for the ones in Dallas and Seattle, and they may not have fans all season.
Right.
So
and you're I could see
Dodgers
Houston
fans who bought a bunch of tickets to Anaheim who aren't going to be able to boo, and will probably have whatever the equivalent of booing blue balls would be because they just got to get it out somewhere.
I think they're called Twitter rants.
That's the new name of this podcast, Booing Blue Balls.
I just never want to hear about booing blue balls again because I'm in pain. You know, that
I am too. You know, it's funny because we talked about the revenue sharing in tickets. I can see Jim Crane doing donated 50% tickets for free to get people in to still buy concessions and create a home field advantage. I do think, Scott, you're right though. I think I hate to try to find positives in a coronavirus and try to find positives in the situation we're in. But I do think that by the time 2021 rolls around, people are going to be tired of the story. You are going to see a lot less people fired up. And as far as like hostile crowds, it's not like Yankee Stadium was super welcoming. I mean, they literally threw a beer at a guy while he was pissing and yelled "fuck Altuve" so loud it was on the Fox broadcast. It's not. How could it get any worse? They could shoot him, I guess. I don't know. How could it get any worse?
It is New York. I mean, maybe. It's possible. We can ask Scotty later.
Yeah.
Mandatory muggings.
I was really curious because you're thinking about that take. I mean, and also, you know, that to feed off of that, if the agreement between the major league owners and players are that here's the prorated salaries, but you can't have anyone in attendance, then that's really going to tie your hands too. And you're probably going to feel a little jilted if you could potentially put 50% of the people in the stadium, but the agreement between the players and owners keeps you from being able to do that. So
yeah, but we're playing with house money at that point. If we get fans, great. We don't have fans, great. Nobody else does either. From a standpoint of the abuse that the Astros are going to take on the road, it matters not if we have fans in town. It matters if there's anybody in the stadiums on the road.
Yeah, I figure it'll all come down to what do New York and LA allow.
It absolutely will. They will not want an undue advantage to the teams in the middle of the country, flyover country. that theoretically could. I don't know what Missouri's rules are right now, but again, Texas, we can have 50%.
Yeah, you're not having anybody in them. You're not filling anything out like that right now here. No.
Okay.
Things still shut down. But, you know, we'll see what the pods look like. It's going to be interesting once we finally get back to playing, and hopefully we will. And I didn't mean to steer us off course, but just really curious and thought about that.
No, I think it's a good question. And again, I try to stem anything out of positive out of it all. You know, I do think there are some logistical reasons why a shorter season works in the Astros' favor. I mean, in a shorter season, you get to throw Verlander, Greinke, Lance McCullers in a shorter situation where they all likely will stay healthy. I think there are areas like that where the Astros, I think, come out ahead a little bit. So,
yeah,
but we'll see.
Yep, fair.
Andy, you had some curious, like, head tilts.
You said you named the top three in our rotation, and this is deep cover Astros talk, but that means that Jose Urquidy and Josh James are going to have more exposure to the same other 10 teams for a 50 or 70 or 82 game season, which means their ERAs are probably going to be inflated because familiarity does not benefit pitchers.
Right, but I think everybody has that same situation. I would take our top three.
But I only care about my team.
Okay.
I want everybody else to be at a disadvantage. Bang, bang. And I don't care if the A's have only one good starter. That's,
you know, speaking of that purely from a Cardinals perspective, that excites me over the fact that Adam Wainwright, who's really getting close to 40, being able to throw a limited number of games extremely effectively without any wear and tear on that arm, really, I think it helps those guys quite a bit. You know, younger arms like Dakota Hudson, Jack Flaherty, they're going to be fine either way.
But,
and also Carlos Martinez, who has shown for the past two or three years that he was having difficulty making through the season as a starter, but he was a great closer. He showed up in spring training this year more trim than ever, and throwing a little bit more gas than ever, and just in the best shape of his life, built to withstand a long haul. And now there's not a long haul necessary. But how many other players are there like that out there that we don't know of that are really taking care of themselves in this dead time or not, right? How many guys
are going to
McDonald's
right?
three times a week?
That's the key.
I know Justin Verlander stays active with many activities off the field.
I could. Yeah, he gets exercise without getting out of bed.
Which is good for him. But he's in the same boat as what you're talking about. He's a guy that, even though he hasn't had health issues, he was going in with a groin surgery, some shoulder problems in spring training, and now he doesn't have to pace himself over 35 starts.
That's right.
He's probably going to get 15 starts if we play an 82-game schedule, and he can go full bore and still be in prime shape for the playoffs.
Will the playoffs be neutral sites or no?
I can't see the first round being neutral sites because you'd have to have too many stadiums tied up. But I could absolutely see the NLCS, the ALCS, and the World Series being neutral sites in southern cities with dome stadiums. And most likely probably Arlington because they're Miami maybe.
Because Arlington will be there.
Hey, finally they'll play baseball in Miami.
Somebody's got to eventually.
Scott, how many rounds of the playoffs will it be, and how many rounds is too many?
I think you'll take eight teams from NL and AL, and I, unlike Andy, I think everything's going to be purely at a neutral site, and I think that because you're going to be later on in the year when I do think we'll have a spike coming back. You know, at a certain point in time, we have to remember the virus. Right. We talk about the money. We talk about everything else that's coming up. But that virus is still kind of lurking out there. And so I think that's going to force them. I do agree with Andy. It'll force them into southern cities, dome stadiums. It's going to be really weird. But, you know, God help the guys that have to play the pod in Tampa. But if you got to go play in a Costco, you got to go play in a Costco, I guess.
Well, this is Rob Manfred's world, too. He could throw a complete curveball and say 50 games, 22-game teams in the playoffs, and it's all in Toronto. Go!
They got national health care. You'll be fine. All right, last question. We are going to have live baseball back. What is today? Today's dramatically checked watch. June 11th, the first pitch in the Bismarck, North Dakota pod is June 15th. are y'all going to see yourselves a little bit more interested in what's going on in collegiate summer league and independent baseball, or is it still going to be, if it was a non-factor before, is it a non-factor now?
I will definitely be more interested because I will be interested. In the past, I really haven't paid that much attention to collegiate woodbet leagues other than maybe the Cape Cod League. But now, yeah, baseball. I'm talking about making a 2.5-3 hour drive to Normal, Illinois to watch baseball games at the Corn Crib. Yes, it will impact me in a positive way.
I'm flying to North Dakota. I win. Andy.
That's true.
What should be happening on Saturday, the 13th, is that the College World Series should be starting in a normal world. And so this is the time, even if I don't care about the teams playing, that I would have baseball on my TV. I would have it in the background. I'd be listening because there are some fantastic things that happen in the College World Series, even though I support a team that's only made it there 8 times in 130 years. 6 times in 130 years. Anyway, so this is literally just – it's going to be baseball. If it's televised at all, it'll probably be on a TV in my house because I like – baseball happening around me. If I can get out to a game, even better. So the fact that there's going to be a pod in Sugarland, there's going to be a pod in Round Rock, there's going to be a pod at a couple different places that are driving distance. I don't know if Corpus was mentioned.
No, they're not for some reason. I think they're going to be doing something with high school kids, but Corpus.
I mean, there's enough where I could do day trips and go see baseball when I need to. And I still believe that provided Major League Baseball allows it, there will be fans at some point at Major League games this year. It may be just in September, but I still think it's going to happen.
And now on to close it out, the right-hander from Houston, Texas, James Christopher.
And so, again, that does wrap us up. I want to thank Randy for joining us. I want to thank Scott and Andy for sitting down and taking some time. And I want to do a shout out to the guys at Before the Pitch. And I hope that you saw the video we did last week, and then we're going to be working on it this week, where we went into Fantasyland and we redrafted all the Major League Baseball teams, put them in new cities, picked new identities. The identity reveal will drop next week. So if you're looking for some guys to be super nerdy about the game of baseball and have a lot of fun doing it, I highly recommend checking that out. But until next time, stay safe, stay sane. We've got a packed, packed episode for you next Tuesday. We have got some exciting news going on with minor league baseball and collegiate summer league baseball. A lot of it set here in the state of Texas that we can't wait to talk to you about. So until next time, let's get to it.